Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Stage Right. On today's episode, we have my good friend, Dustin Bushnell, a.k.a. Duddy B, vocalist and guitarist for the band Dirty Heads. Also, half of Rome and Duddy, a new project with Rome from Sublime with Rome, and the owner and curator of Cutlass Brand Clothing. Duddy and I toured together for many years while I was working for the Dirty Heads as their monitor engineer, and I'm very excited to have him on the show today. So let's get right into it. How you doing, man? Where are you calling in from?
I am in Huntington Beach. I'm in my warehouse, actually, where we do the Dirty Heads rehearsals, and this is where I record my podcast. And
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yep.
Yeah, feeling good with Duddy.
Yep, that's right.
Are you guys still in that same space where we used to rehearse and do all the pre-pro and stuff with the cars and...
With the cars and stuff. Were you in here with that?
Yeah.
Wait, yeah, we were. But once COVID started, we were doing the podcast from an actual studio. And then once COVID hit, that studio had to shut its doors. So me and my brother came to the warehouse. And you remember what the warehouse looked like. It was just cars and just, you know, cases everywhere. And then in the back right corner, we would make a little bit of room so we could rehearse, you know, like, and it was just, it was a storage unit, really.
Totally.
Man, me and my brother came here and we didn't want to stop the podcast. So I swear, man, we've turned this place around. You would trip if you looked in here now. I just got done setting up too, a full little sound stage that's right next to this where we shoot the podcast. Because we're going to start doing live performances for the podcast in the new year. And then
Oh, nice.
On the other side of that soundstage, I built a full bar so that, you know, if the guests that are coming in want to bring friends or whatever, they can sit over there and hang out. So it'd be more of a live performance vibe. And we were just having fun over here, just continuing to build this place out.
That's awesome.
Adapting, dude. That's awesome. Adapting. That's cool to hear. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we should jump right in. If you've ever heard this podcast, the biggest question we ask is what is your morning bagel? What do you put on it? How do you prepare it?
I did hear this. You know, well, I have two different kinds. It depends the occasion, okay? Like, if I'm just like, I just need a quick bite and I'm not like sitting down at the restaurant or something and I'm just on the go, like, I just want like a classic cream cheese, tomato, and some lemon pepper. Boom.
Okay.
That's
Ooh,
all.
Lemon pepper. All right.
Simple,
all right.
Sweet.
Have you ever Good put lemon pepper on your bagel?
Never. Yes.
You're missing out if you haven't. Yeah, it's absolutely changes the game. Yeah. But if I'm like at a restaurant, specifically, I'll even shout it out. There's one, it's called Walt's Wharf. That's in Seal Beach near my house. And I'll go there sometimes for breakfast and they have like the classic. I get the everything bagel with some cream cheese, lox, red onions. And then here's the topper. They throw on capers. Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one's just gangster.
I love the capers, and our last guest, Colin, tour manager for Iration, he mentioned that he fries the capers, get them a little bit crispy.
Ooh, I've never done that. Might have to try that.
Dude, capers.
Yeah, that's a vibe right there.
That's how you finish up a lox.
Yeah. So that's it. If you want a full meal, for sure the lox one on the go, give me a classic with a little lemon pepper and I'm good to go.
It travels better.
It does. You can't be like, you can't be on the move eating lox. Like, that's just weird.
No. And then we haven't talked about this yet, but of course, Carlos used to work for Dirty Heads.
That's right. For quite a bit.
Yeah. Can you talk a bit about how that relationship started and how it went? Did he suck? Was he okay?
No, he was great. I don't know exactly. Was it someone that was working with us, knew you or had worked with you?
We met up and toured together.
Oh, you were with the Expendables.
With the Expendables. And we did that tour, Cabin by the Sea summer tour.
Yep.
I think it was 14. Yeah, the year after that, you guys were changing into in-ear monitors and looking for a monitor engineer. And
yeah, and that was a crazy time for us. Carlos was there with us when we were kind of making that transition from really like small clubs and bigger bars into like actually like bigger venues and having huge crowds. It was kind of in that transfer of taking that next step up to, you know, the next level. And it was a crazy wild time. And, you know, that was right when we were really just going hard at it. But it was a time too where we were all kind of still somewhat young. So we were just partying our asses off like idiots would, who are just like, oh, we're going to be rock stars forever. Ah, you know, like, So, man, that was just a wild time in our band. How long were you with us? At least 3 or 4 years?
I think it was like almost 3 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was interesting, like seeing, just getting the different festival slots with you guys and the crowds getting mm-hmm. bigger and just the show getting bigger and how you guys had a vision and always took that next step. I love that about you guys.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. It's like we always have a goal, but once you get to that goal, we're never like, sweet, we're good. It's always like, okay,
what's next the next goal? One?
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like, you know, that's you got to be like that in life, you know?
100%.
I mean, fuck, we shared like hotel rooms at that point too.
Oh man, that was it. Yeah, that was so long ago. Even when we would get hotel rooms, yeah. We were all sharing hotel rooms. We wouldn't even get our own hotel room. And it seemed like me and Carlos would always just like, yeah, let's go. We both like smoked and we got along well, so.
That's exactly what Carlos and I do. It's like, yeah. All right, Carlos and I, we're in a room together. Fuck yeah. These other guys.
You find someone that you vibe with on tour and you're like, okay. Yeah, you like the AC about the same temp and you don't snore.
Cool. Oh, man. Bro. Dude. It's hard being with Roman Duddy. Because that dude wants to live in an Arctic world at all times. And I'm the opposite. Like, I don't want it like warm or hot, but I'm a normal person. Like, yo, let's put that AC to like 69.
Normal. Yeah.
That's the number.
I'll leave the room. I'll come back. God. It's at 61 and full blast 61. Like, like, Jesus Christ. I've learned my lesson, though. I know when I'm going to go in the studio with Rome, I bring layers.
Oh, that's so good.
Layers. He's sitting there in shorts and Crocs, and I'm in like snow gear.
That's so amazing.
So how did that come about, the Roman Duddy project? And what have you guys recorded, released? What are the future plans?
Yeah, what's coming up?
We've got a lot, actually. It all started, really. It was just, we had some time off, both bands, and me and Rome have always talked about kind of doing these separate solo acoustic albums and then kind of doing an acoustic tour together, you know, Rome solo, Duddy solo acoustic tour. So Cheese was starting to put that together and we thought, oh, it'd be super fun if maybe we like put out a cover song together. And we put out Stone Me by Van Morrison. And we had so much fun doing that song and we got such a great reaction. We were like, let's put out a cover song so at the end of our set, we can come out and like play Lay Me Down together and then like do the cover song together or something. But we got such a great response from it and we just had such a great time in the studio like recording it and whatnot. We're like, should we just kind of fuck the solo albums? And you want to just kind of do a little tag team, like acoustic-y, vibey, like, yeah, you know? And so we just started wrapping our heads around this idea and I started flying out to Nashville and just writing with him and having some writing sessions with other people and just kind of trying to see what the idea was. And man, in that process, we kind of found, we're like, dude, we got something really, really cool here. We've only released that one cover song and we're going to release another cover song, I believe next month. And it's a fun one. You know Loggins and Messina?
No.
It's Jimmy Messina and Kenny Loggins. They had their band when they came together, Loggins and Messina, back in the day. Jimmy Messina played with Buffalo Springfield and shit. Really cool. So long story short, they had this song. Me and Rome went up to Idlewild, which is a mountain near my house. And we got them a cabin for like 3 or 4 days just to kind of write and vibe out. And this song came on and it was called Lahaina by Loggins and Messina. And it's like, when we told them, we're like, hey, we're going to do this cover song of yours. They were like, that one? That's the one you guys chose, you know? But it was just kind of a funny song, you know? It's kind of just cool and funny. So we did this cover and what's really cool is we got Jimmy Messina on it. So Rome sings a verse, I sing a verse, and Jimmy Messina sings a verse. And, it's just really fun. It's super cool. To be honest, the cover, it's not even in the same vibe really as the Roman Duddy project, but it's just fun. We just thought that'd be fun to put out. So we're going to put out that other cover song, I believe, next month. And then we've got about 12 to 14 originals now that we've written and recorded demos for. And yeah, we're putting together a full album and as far as right now, which obviously you know it works in this industry, this is just an idea. things will fucking change, of course. But our plan is to hopefully try and put out the first single of our own original stuff about June, and then release the whole album by like September or October.
Love it.
And then you maybe do one single and then one more single and then drop the whole album. That's kind of the plan we're thinking about. And when we drop the album, do a full tour. So
a full tour on it. Interesting. Well, that kind of segues into our next question, because this podcast is a lot about kind of bringing new people into tour, people who are trying to like find out how to do this. So what do you look for in a crew member, in a monitor engineer, in a guitar tech? Like what is your, like the big things that matter?
Obviously, we'll get into the actually working and your skill set. But like, I think just as far as touring goes, one of the most important thing, and I don't even think this just goes for crew. I think this goes for band members too. Dude, attitude and how you're able to deal with other people and how you're able to deal with problems, because there's going to be problems every fucking day on the road. And if there wasn't, dude, mark that day and remember it. You know, like, so that's a lot. I think it's really like understanding that everybody's out here doing a job, from the band to the band's crew to the house crew to everyone. They're all there doing their job, trying to do what they can to make the show go on. So it's like, you have to understand that. Like, that's huge attitude for sure. And learning how to deal with problems without blowing up and getting all flustered. It's a must. But then obviously it's like, you know, they need to be good at their job. You know, for instance, if you have a front of house guy and every night you're hearing, and you're seeing people in the crowd do this shit, you're like, great guy, can't work with him, you know? And that just goes for anything, you know? I've had a guitar tech, holy shit. Were you with us when JT was there?
Dude, yes.
And I don't even mean to blast him out, because this is one of those dudes where you're like, yeah, want to go have a beer or something? Fuck yeah. He's a great dude. No issues with him. Super nice, sweet guy. Worst guitar tech in the world. This guy was crazy.
And we gave him chances too, dude.
So many chances.
Talked about the mistakes and like...
I would have sit-down meetings with him where I would walk him through how to... A guitarist should never have to tell his guitar tech how to guitar tech. Right? Every other guitar tech I've ever had is better at guitar than I am. That's how it should be, you know? Like,
I just remember the first day of tour rehearsals and he looks at the guitar boat and he was like, what is this? And we were just kind of like, he's joking, right?
Oh, man. It was crazy. It was, I'll walk you through a couple of quick ones and then you'll get, but it was first off is he didn't know that, like, obviously if on the tuner pedal, if there's like a dot in that bottom right corner that's like flat or sharp, right? There's a flat sign, there's a sharp sign. If the dot's next to the flat or sharp, that's a flat or whatever. You get it, right? He didn't know that. So he would hand me my guitar every night and it would be completely out of tune because he would just see A or F or whatever. And he'd be like, cool.
Oh my God.
Would all be, some would be sharp, some would be flat. So it was just all over the place. So my first strum, this was every night for like, he only lasted like a week or so. It was every show for a week or two. My first strum would be completely out of tune. And I would just be like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. And I'd look at him like, I tuned it. You know? So that was one. I had to teach him how to do that. One day, then he hands me my guitar and it's just not working. And we come to find, oh, there's no battery in it. I'm like, dude, if there's no battery in it, how'd you tune it? So you tried to tune it. The tuner wasn't working, obviously, because it wasn't getting a signal. But you were just like, nah, here you go, bud. Good luck. So that was just ridiculous. I walked to my mic one time and this was fucking hilarious. I walked to my mic stand, and if you're a guitar player who sings, you know, here's my mic stand, and right down below that, guitar pedal board. So you can stand and sing and hit your pedals. Bro, he had taped my guitar pedal down to the stage 10 feet away from my mic stand. It was in the middle of the stage, like where Jared would be singing.
God,
I get to my mic stand and I'm looking over at him. We're playing.
Yeah.
The set is going. We're playing and I'm looking over at him and he's like, what, what, what? And I'm like looking down at my guitar pedal. I'm looking at him. I'm looking at my pedal. He's like, what, what? So I finally, while playing guitar, I just walk over to the pedal and I just point at it. And he goes, ugh. Like, how did you not notice that?
Oh my All God. Right. That's
And
amazing.
I'll do one more because this incredible. Is the finale and then we'll get off of this because this is just the best. And this was the final straw where after the show, I was like, dude. And he said, I'm fired. I went, yeah. Sorry, bud. So every day he hands me my, because we were starting this set too, I think was like a rap song or something. Like it was like Franco White or something like that. Where I don't play guitar on that first song. So I would come out from the intro would be on, the band would now be out kind of playing. And when the first line would come out, I would come out with my mic, you know, and do my rap. And so I'm standing over by, you know, off stage by where all the guitar world is. And every day he's supposed to meet me right there before the show and give me my wireless microphone. So I'm standing there. The intro's on now. He's nowhere to be seen. And I don't have a microphone. And I finally see him. He's on the complete other side of the stage in monitor world. Why? Who knows? He's on the other side every single day. We've told him that. But today he's like, I'm just going to be over here with the mic. And I look at him. I'm like, dude, we're behind stage now. The huge banner and everything, we're behind the banner. So the band is in front of the banner playing to the crowd. I am behind the banner looking at JT going, dude, I need my fucking mic. So what happens is, if I can try and say this so you can picture it, is it's like there's the banner and we're behind the banner. The band's in front of the banner facing the crowd. And right behind the banner, there's about a foot and a half gap until you get to Slightly Stupid's gear, which is behind stage all set up, ready to go because they're after us, right? So JT comes running down this little like foot and a half gapway between the back of the banner and Slightly Stupid's drum set. And he fucking, and behind the drummer on stage, Matty O, who's playing drums right now for us, he's got a speaker right by his drum stool, right? So that he can hear stuff. So JT's running down the fucking, the little gap and he hits that speaker through the banner and he falls onto Slightly Stupid's drum set, knocks the entire drum set down, meanwhile holding my microphone that is on. So now out front in the crowd, this is the lead vocal microphone. It's the loudest thing there is. And he fucking falls into a drum set holding it, and all you hear is... And then he drops the mic and it rolls somewhere. And all I remember is Christian Brandenmeyer running over. He grabs JT with one hand and fucking tosses him out of the drum set, grabs the microphone and hands it to me. And I come out and my whole first verse, I'm just laughing. I'm trying to do my rap, but I'm crying. I'm laughing so hard at what I just witnessed. And then we had to play the fucking show and it was just a debacle.
Oh my God.
Well, I thought I'd had some bad nights on the road in my early days, but holy shit, that is next level.
So talking about things that have gone wrong on stage, what are like some other things that you guys have experienced, like showstoppers or just...
I would say, what's your worst moment? But I feel like we just heard some of the worst moments.
No, right? Honestly, that was a great moment. I now have that memory now of him falling into... The look on his face when he was falling into that drum set was just, oh, I'm fucked. I'm fucking both bands up right now. Like, oh God. Oh my God. Oh man, you know what? We've had some really crazy, you know, things happen on stage from, I can't remember the exact name of the festival, but it was a very big festival. And it was one of those where the stage turns. So a band's playing and the other band's, you know, behind that. And when that band's done, you spin, right? Boom. Humongous crowd and like not our crowd, you know? It was a very, I think this was like a huge radio show, lots of alternative bands, lots of like butt rocky bands and the Dirty Heads, right? But we have a pretty good slot. So we're probably like second or third from the headliner, you know, good spot. It's fucking packed. There's 15, 20,000 people there. And like I said, not our crowd. So it's not like they're just like, oh, whatever. We love these guys, you know? We turn around and they're probably going, where's Seether? You know, like, who knows? But this fucking stage turns and we have our intro going and it goes and it turns and it turns and it turns and we go and nothing's working. Just all we can hear is Matt playing drums behind me and shit. And it's just like, and we're sitting there and it's one of those things now where it's like, what do we do? So we just kind of keep playing, hoping that it's going to turn on. And then after like 2 or 3 minutes, it was one of those things where we're like, they're not going to fix this. So all of the band members, we all kind of look at each other and we're like, let's get the fuck out of here. So we just walked off backstage. And they worked on it for 20 so odd minutes. We came out and maybe played 2 songs and then left. That was it. Yeah. And that feeling of just like, you're just helpless. You're like, you know, and you start to hear the like, we can't hear you. And you're like, yeah, dickhead, I know. I can't hear me either. Yeah. Trust me, more than anybody, we know.
Yeah, like, this is not how it's supposed to go. Trust
We're
me.
We're living this nightmare right now. Yeah. Yeah, you're all staring at me and I feel like shit.
This is uncomfortable.
So that, I mean, there's been those, you know, there's just crazy. You know what, too, is always wild to me? The stupid fights you see happen like in the front rows and shit. And my worst thing, and this goes out to all you listeners out there who are music, live music attendees. Don't be this person, okay? If you're at a concert and there's people up on that front row, those people have been there since the opening act. They're waiting for their fucking favorite band. They put in the work. They've sat there for 5 hours, not pissing, not getting drinks. They're there for the show. They're fucking in. They're dancing. They're singing every word. Leave these people alone. And then you'll see it coming. Like, it's usually like a couple drunk girls or a girl and a guy, and they're just fucking hammered. And you see them coming through the crowd, and you see everyone getting bumped, like, whoa, who's this? What's this? And then these drunk people, they fucking get to that front, and they grab that rail and they squirm themselves in front of the other people. And then they start with their hands up, just being the drunk, just blocking everybody, bumping.
Dude.
I've wanted to stop so many shows and be like, hey, get the fuck out of here. You're ruining everybody's time. Don't be that guy. Yeah, but that stage turning was like, oh, fuck. Yeah, I'll never forget that one. Because it was just like, normally, if something goes wrong on stage, it's fixed within like 10, 15 seconds. And you're like, okay, whatever, move on. But that one just never ended. It was like, oh, we just have to walk off stage now.
And then live 20 minutes of watching.
And then just stand back there, just waiting. And the whole crowd like, boo! And then we got to go out there again. And hey, guys, sorry about that.
Oh,
We're idiots.
Oh, my God, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Well, moving
let's
past
talk about some fun
these
stuff
horrible
now.
Stage moments. let's talk about how you started. Not even just Dirty Heads, but how you started in music and how this all came to be, you know?
It was, I don't know, asked for drums for Christmas when I was like 9 or 10, right? And we grew up pretty broke. So I didn't get the drums for like 2 years. Like I asked 1 year, didn't get it. Asked the next year, like didn't get it. And I think it was like maybe like 11-ish or 12-ish. For a Christmas, I got a drum set and my brother got an electric guitar and a little amp. And like one of our best friends in the neighborhood got a bass. And we just started kind of doing a little garage jam together at that age. But we quickly learned within like the first year that like I'm not great on drums. And my brother was really good on drums. Like he was one of those naturals on drums. Like he just instantly was playing beats and I was like, fuck. And I just started playing his guitar and we just said, do you want to trade? He started playing drums. I started playing the guitar. And that was at about 12 years old or so when we really started getting into it. And then when I got to like high school, just the friends I would meet, I was really attracted to kids who played music for some reason. I was always like, oh, you play guitar? Let's fucking hang out, you know? And I remember I had these couple friends that just, they all played guitar and drums and music, and we would always just be jamming together. And we started our first band. I think I was maybe a freshman or sophomore in high school. It was a punk band called Unknown. I was super into punk.
Awesome.
And yeah, we were playing, you know, little local punk shows. We were doing that. We were playing like in the bowl and in the middle of our, you know, school at lunch. We'd be out there playing. And our drummer actually was only in 8th grade at the time. It was my good friend Clint's little brother. And he fucking shredded these. You couldn't even see his head over the drum set. You just see these sticks just coming out. And it was funny, man. There was twice that we did the daytime lunch performance at our high school. And I remember we had to, the period before lunch, we had to drive over to his middle school and check him out and bring him to our high school play and then go back and drop him off. It was freaking hilarious. But
That's amazing.
Yeah, so we did that for a long time. And while I was in that band, actually, is when I met Jared. But was when I started. My dad had built us a little soundproof room in my garage. And at night, I had this crew of friends that would come over to our house, like after parties and shit. It wasn't the guys in my punk band, but it would be I just had this little crew of friends, and we'd come over to my house, my garage. We'd sit there all night drinking 40s, smoking weed because we thought we were super cool, and just we would make these stupid fucking rap songs, right? Like the worst Casio beats you've ever heard. No chorus ever, just taking turns doing our rap verses. And they were exactly what you think. My friends call me Duddy, and you could call me Daddy. Stupid shit like that, you know? It was what 13-year-olds would say. But we would go to these parties with all our friends, and they would play our raps, right? They would play our fucking songs. And that's actually how I met Jared, is he was at a party I was at. He heard these and was like, who's this? And they were like, it's these dudes. They make these dumb raps. And he was like, we need to be friends, you know? So Jared started coming over, yeah, and we were making all these dumb rap songs and blah, blah, blah. And then while doing that, though, me and Jared became like best friends instantly. And we started making little songs together. And then I was started being like, dude, like you got to hear Jared's like first rap. It's fire. Like he was the first guy. When he came over, we were all like, oh, you're kind of dope, actually. Like we're joking. Like you're fucking, this shit's dope. And of course he was like, no, it's not. This shit's like, you guys are better. And we're like, no, this is dope. So little by little, I was like, I would always be hanging with Jared and like, yo, let's try and make like an actual song. Like not, you know, cause I was like, you're sick. Let me like, let's try and make a dope song. I think the first one we ever wrote was Antelope. And yeah. And it was just a stupid little guitar riff. No chorus, like I said, and just some raps. That was what we did. We didn't even, oh, chorus, singing? I'm not singing, ew, you know? and we started showing some friends and family members and, you know, and we got a surprising reaction from everyone. Everyone was like, this is actually really cool. I like this, you know? Made a little demo of like 4 or 5 dumb songs that we made in my garage. And I had a friend of mine who knew Cheese. He was like, hey, Cheese, I know these... Like, I think at the time we were maybe 18 or something. And he's like, I met these kids. They make these dumb little songs in their garage. It's kind of cool. You want to hear it. And he showed it to Cheese. And Cheese was like, fuck, man, I want to work with these guys. So James, my friend, he called me. He's like, hey, I know this manager guy. He kind of found and helped Guns N' Roses get going. And he's working with like Korn and Linkin Park and shit. And he wants to like have a meeting with you guys and manage you guys. And me and Jared were like, yeah, right. Fuck off, you know? He's like, no, he wants to have lunch with you guys tomorrow. So, you know, we were just literally like, sure, we'll go get a free lunch out of this, but whatever. Fucking 25 years later, here we are, you know?
That's crazy.
Wow.
I fucking love that. That's a great origin story. Holy shit. From stupid big dick raps to packed arenas.
Yeah, it's crazy. That was us kind of figuring out our little style. And that's what it kind of grew to be for a bit. It's like catchy little lick, some raps, but now we just add a chorus. It's not much different.
It's grown to a lot, man. I mean, each album you guys do, I feel like it's a great step in creativity and production.
Hell yeah. Thank you.
Like you said before, I feel like you're a band that never feels stagnant. Like, I feel like you keep growing with every single record instead of like having your hit record and just kind of stopping and playing that for 10 years more, you know, and just like kind of packing the seats. And that's, I think that's really special.
Well, I think what goes into that a lot too is we really, really, really enjoy making music and we want to make music that we think is cool. So we're never like, oh man, we have to do another Vacation or we need another Lay Me Down. We're just like, dude, let's write some cool music. What do you feel like writing right now? And whatever's cool now, what's inspiring us now? You know, we're never like, oh, we got to go back and do an album like that last one. It's like, that's our last thought ever. We just want to make music that, first off, if we're not happy with it, if I don't listen to it and be like, this is dope, we're not doing it. You know, and same with Jared, same with everyone. We have to be, first off, we have to be stoked on it and we have to be happy with it. And I think that a lot of people forget that. And they're just trying to, a lot of people write going, what are other people going to like? Do you think they'll like this? Well, it's like, dude, if you don't like it, it's probably not good.
Why are you even making it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So first off, make music that you're stoked on. And, you know, I think go from there.
What's the point of repeating the same album, repeating the same song, the structure?
Totally.
Like, take a risk, have fun.
If you're a band with a following, you know, people whether they know it or not, are listening to you because they like your musical sensibilities. So as long as you keep those with you and keep on progressing forward, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear what you like. That's why they like you as a band. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They became fans in the first place for a reason.
Totally.
Yeah.
You gotta be doing it for your, you know, make yourself happy first. And people listening too, it's like, you'll get those comments, you know, no matter what album you put out, you're going to make some of your fans are not going to be stoked on it. Some of them are going to be super stoked on it. And then you're also going to make some new fans. So you got to think of all of that. So yes, every album we've put out, we get these comments of like, oh man, you need to go make another album. Like, you know, this one. It's like, yeah, well, we're not making the album for you, just you. You're the only person in the world and we're making this for you. It's like, dude, if you don't like that song, sorry, but this, we made this album. We didn't hold you at gunpoint to go buy it and listen to it. We just made this, said, hope you like it. If you don't, you don't, but it's not for you. It's for fucking everybody, you know? So you're never going to please everybody.
Dude, this is for us mainly, and then obviously our fans. And if it connects with anyone else, that's great.
Yeah,
totally. And it's like, obviously, we want nothing more than to make our fans happy. It's not like we're in there going, ooh, our fans are going to hate this. Yes. You know, like, we want them to love it. But going in, we know we have fans that really like our reggae, more reggae stuff. We have fans that like really only like our hip hop shit. And then we have fans that, you know, like just the more kind of singer songwriter-y, just the more cabin by the sea-ish vibe, you know? So, and then we have fans that just like it all, you know? And so to try, you just have to know going in, like some people are not going to like this, but we do. And we just hope that people enjoy it.
I definitely know a few of those fans who love everything. I have one friend who I don't talk to, but she was from high school. And when she learned I was touring with you guys, she lost her mind and sent me a million messages and then came to that show at the Caboose and was like, holy shit, do you know Duddy?
The Caboose. Oh, man.
The Caboose.
It closed down, actually. That all that shit's closed down now. They just shut permanently, which not a great venue, but, you know.
That's one thing that's scary is I'm just wondering how many of these like mid-range to little smaller venues are just going to later.
Dude, Slim's, you know, in San Francisco closed. St. Yeah. Rock and Hermosa.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. I just had Dan Sheehan on the other day on our podcast and was talking to him about this. And just, it's crazy how much this has really affected the music industry, man. Like
billions.
And I, dude. Billions. I think I heard something and I could be wrong. I honestly want to say that they said that the music industry in total has already lost $30 billion.
Yeah, that's what I read yesterday or two days ago. Yeah.
It's out
it's
of
just
control.
Sad. It's sad for any kind of bands that are trying to start up because a lot of the venues closing are the venues that you went to, the bar venues you went to when you were, you know, 13 trying to play in a band, you know. That's where I started off, in those shitty bars in Chicago and Minneapolis, and they're just all closing down now.
Well, and what's terrible too is it's like, and I know a few like of these bands that were just getting going. Hadn't really done tours yet, but maybe had done a couple shows and then put out like their first album and were just about to go on their first summer tour. And then it got, and now
nothing. Yeah.
Now what? Yeah, man. And it's like, dude, I know a handful of these bands and you're just like, dude, what are they going to fucking do? Yeah. And even when touring starts back up, they're not going to be able to afford to do it because the venues that they're going to be able to play, those will only be able to be 20% full. So they're looking at like at tops, these bands are going to be able to have 40 people at their shows. Tops, you know, like in these bars, it's like you can't tour like that. You can't make enough money. The venues can't hire you, you know, like I don't know what these bands are going to fucking do.
Yeah, I wonder what the budgets are going to be like, because I've heard even like if you have history at a venue of selling it out, they're not going to offer you the same deals that you were getting. You know what I mean?
They can't.
The budgets they can't. Are not going to be the same. And
no. And that's why when we've done some of these drive-in shows and this last tour that me and Rome were supposed to do like 2 weeks ago that got canceled, we were set to do two shows a day because that's the only way that it can make sense for the venues and for us. So play the show, everybody out, new crowd in, play the fucking show. You know, that's the only way you can actually get paid enough to make it make
sense. That's insane. That's unbelievable. Yeah, it's just such a different world.
What cities were you guys supposed to go to? And
it was a small one. It was three in Texas and one in like Oklahoma. it was just a small little quick run. And, you know, when all these bands went out and started doing the drive-in shows, and the Dirty Heads even did some, and it kind of looked like things were starting to lean back to where, okay, people are... So we booked this little run, and then obviously once we booked it, the day we advertised it, it was like, everything's spiking. We're like, oh, okay, cancel that.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
2020.
2020, baby.
Classic move.
Dude. It's... Yeah, it was wild, and it was funny. Well, it's not funny. It's actually really, really shitty, but one of the things I was talking to Dan about that's really wild if you think about it, I was like, is my biggest show in the past now?
Right.
Like, is the biggest show I'll ever play, is that in the past? It could very well be. Because even once this all really gets going, it's like, I don't... Look, hopefully not and probably not, but there's a chance that the biggest show that the Dirty Heads have ever played now is in our fucking past. And that's a wild thought because you're always just thinking, oh, we got to get to that next step. We're growing, we're growing, we're working hard. And you're seeing the work that you put in pay off. And you're like, oh my God, I can't wait. Oh, this time we played this 15,000 seater and there was only 8,000 people there, dude. Next thing I want 12,000 there. Like, and you keep wanting to grow. And now it's like, ooh, I just want to play. And when we do go out and play, are we going to be able to have big shows again? You know, that's it's a strange thought.
Well, fuck, let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about your gear and what you use on the road, what you love.
Dude, what I love on my gear is my amp. I have a Divided by 13. Holy shit, man. This thing, it sounds so rad. It's only like a little, you know, cab with like 212s in it. It's nothing big. So you literally send this guy a few different tracks that you like the tone on the guitar, and then he builds you an amp to try and kind of get that, you know, what he figures what you like, and he doesn't want all the same. He's like, pick like different tones you like, send it to me, and I'll make you an amp where you can get all those if you want it. I don't know what it is about this, man. On clean, just the clean, nothing, no pedal, nothing through this amp. You just plug in, you go clean, and it's just got like the most natural, like it's smooth while it's got this grit that it's like, I can't replicate it with any pedal. You cannot. This thing sounds fucking amazing.
Yeah, because this stuff is so beautiful. It's hand-built. It's all, the circuitry is super, super simple, which is why I think it sounds so natural, because there's not much in the way of that tone. It's really just a guitar into a few little circuits that are just built so perfectly. He just knows exactly, his vision is just beautiful, you know?
It's freaking great, man. And it's so wild because I, for a long time, played just the Fender Twins, which is a great amp, but I was playing those because in my thought for that was, well, when we're doing fly dates and festivals and whatever like that, every backline company will have a Fender Twin, so I can just get that amp. It'll be the same amp that I use when I'm playing, so it'll be easy for the sound guy to get. We'll just do that, you know, industry standard almost. It's like an SM58, you know? Yeah. You're just like, sure.
Everybody's got them.
Yeah. So I used that forever, and I was like, this is great, whatever. And then I got the Divided by 13 and was like, oh... I see now. It's funny. And now I've been playing that so long, when I do go do these fly dates and I have to backline, I get a Fender Twin. Not talking shit, Fender Twin, but I can tell that it's like, ooh. It's like, no, where's my Divided by 13? I fucking love that amp, man.
It sounds super different, yeah. I remember you getting it right when I started with you guys. And man, that amp just sounds brilliant. Super natural and smooth, creamy, like rich, dude.
It's rich. It makes all your licks just sound cool. You're just like, ooh, this is nice. Yeah, it's nice on the ears.
That's a dream amp right there. So nice.
Yeah.
Glad to hear you're still rocking that, dude. Hell yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a forever amp.
I'm looking at it right now.
With that love in your eyes.
Yeah. They're not super cheap, but they're also not like crazy expensive. They're a little pricey, but there, I've seen way pricier ones that aren't even half as good. So yeah.
And these are custom hand built.
These are hand fucking made, and they're beautiful.
The
amps.
Wiring
they look
is
so
clean
and nice.
Yeah. And you're just that beautiful green color, which I love, that kind of like almost turquoisey green. It's gorgeous.
Oh, you remember my amp? That's so adorable.
So cute.
So what are you doing for pedals now? Anything new on the board that's exciting?
Nothing new. I don't know. I guess one pedal that I've just been super loving using lately is the Whammy. Yeah. I just have so much fun with the Whammy pedal. It's just like, you can just make the most ridiculous sounds with that fucking thing. And it's super cool. And I just love going up the octaves and just getting all, you know, it's that shit's fun.
The silence solo.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yep. That one's super fun. God. Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, you know, Carlos, I don't use a bunch of effects. I'm most of the time just on clean with a little reverb. I use delays. I use some delays here and there. For certain things, it's an AB pedal, I guess, but I use it for, it just turns two pedals on at the same time or two pedals off. So I hit one and these two pedals turn on and off, and it's just it's a phaser with a tremolo. So sometimes I'll hit both of those. I use that sometimes. And, God, I think that's really it. I'm not like a huge pedal guy. My pedal board looks like I have a bunch going on, but I have my electric line and my acoustic line. So it's like two
setups,
pedal boards in one. So yeah.
Yeah.
And then we can talk guitars, obviously, because Taylor, please sponsor us. We need guitars. Yep. Los 90 new acoustics.
Dude, the Taylors are great. When we're doing like acoustic shows and sit down or even just recording, I use their GS. It's the Grand Symphony. Just, I like it. It's a huge full body acoustic, not cutaway. And it's great for like strumming and skanks and little licks and stuff. It just gets that really, really full, like big, full sound. But on stage for acoustics, I use the T5. It's a great guitar. Look it up if you haven't heard of it. It's a Taylor acoustic electric, but it's got the body almost of like an electric guitar. It's very thin, it's light, and it doesn't have the big open hole. So you don't have to worry about like that acoustic feedback that normal acoustics will give you. And dude, the thing sounds great. It really sounds like a really nice acoustic guitar to plug in and get. And especially I got Matty O back there hitting the fucking drums like a caveman. We got to be loud on there to get over him. So it's great for that, man. You can get that acoustic really loud and never feeds back.
Yeah, I'll say that. It's super consistent in the sound, never feeds back, and it sounds really good right off the bat. Just simple EQing. And
I think more than that, for touring, what Taylor does so, so well is their finishes. Because a lot of guitars, like I'm a big Gibson fan, but those finishes, they're really thin and they love to crack in any kind of like, you know, cold to hot or, you know, low humidity. But a thinner finish sounds better, I think. And I think Taylor's done a great job of still having a thin finish that is so durable that just, I don't worry about them on tour. I really don't. They stay in tune all the time. I've never had a finish crack, even going like on winter tours.
Yeah.
They just really figured that out and did a really great job.
Dude, my Taylor GS, I've been touring with that guitar. I don't play it on stage now anymore. I did. I played that on stage for years. I still bring it every tour because I'll play it in the dressing rooms and on the bus and stuff. I don't even know, maybe 10 years, at least 12 years. I've been traveling the world with that fucking guitar for 12 years. It's perfect. It stays in tune. It's just Taylor does it right.
Yeah, they really do.
But for electric, I'm still using the Ernie Ball, man. I love their guitars. And what's really, really funny is, you guys know I had the clothing line Cutlass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm really good friends with Brian Ball, who, you know, his family runs Ernie Ball. And a couple years back, he's like, yo, we made this new line of guitars. I want you to try it out. I'm like, sweet. What's it called? He's like, it's called the Cutlass. I was like, what? I'm like, you know, I have a clothing line called Cutlass, right? He's like, you do? Oh my God, I didn't know that. So now I play a Cutlass guitar while wearing a Cutlass hat and a Cutlass shirt. No, but they sound great, man. They're super fun to play. They're super easy to play. Very smooth.
Strat-like.
Very strat-like. Yeah. Dave plays Ernie Ball basses as well, which that's just like, that's kind of industry standard too, is those Ernie Ball like Stingrays and shit. They're so nice. They sound so good.
Dude. Duddy, so when did you start your podcast? Because we started this obviously because of the pandemic and
out of necessity.
Out of just like, dude, let's keep the vibe going. Let's call our friends, have conversations. And
well, this was about a year and a half, maybe year and 8 months. I don't know, something like that, that we started it. But I got called into this studio that we were doing it at, and this studio was putting together some online contest where they were going to get all these unsigned artists to send them in their demos, and they were going to, you know, have people voting using their socials. And they had this idea for this crazy, yeah. And they like wanted me to be like the spokesman for it. And I was like, it's not for me, guys. You know, I met with them, and I was like, I gotta be honest. Like, I don't really see this doing anything or going anywhere. And it's not for me. This seems like a lot of fucking work. And, but while I was there, I noticed in that studio, they had a full podcast room. I was like, oh dude, you guys do podcasts out of here? That's rad. And the guy, the owner, was like, dude, if you want to do one, we'll run it out of here for you. And I was like, fuck, I love podcasts. I love listening to podcasts. And in the back of my head, I've always thought that'll be fun to do one. Right. So when he was like, you know, if you want to do one from here, we'll run it. You know, let me know. So I left there. I called my brother and I was like, because my brother, dude, he's just fucking hilarious. And he does his own little, it's called the Morning Ride Show. He's been doing it for like 2 years on Facebook, where every day on his way to work, he records himself and he has this little show and he's great at it, you know? So when I called him, I'm like, hey, you want to do a podcast? He's like, sure. We wrapped our head around it and we just kind of started doing it. And we're at episode, I think we just recorded episode 83 that'll drop tomorrow.
Wow.
And you know what? It's super fun. We're having such a great time with it. And when we first started it, you know, COVID wasn't a thing. So bands were touring all over, athletes were playing. We've had professional, you know, baseball players on. We've had people from bands. We've had UFC fighters. We've had a lot of really cool guests, but not all of them were local. A lot of them just happened to be touring and were in town. So come on by or whatever. So it was really easy for us to get all these guests in. And once COVID hit, like we said, we had to move into the warehouse. No one was really willing to come into the warehouse, obviously, and no one was traveling. So it was like a lot of the local scene, we've kind of already tapped into everyone. And it was just really hard to get guests at that point. So we're like, well, let's just kind of figure out what we can do. Let's make some more segments that me and Jess, my brother, can do on our own. Let's try and figure out how we can do full shows by ourselves, right? So we kind of got into that. And it's funny, like you say, with the band, where it's like you're never going to make everybody happy, yeah, right? Because what we've realized is we got to just make sure we're having fun and liking this. So the show has changed a bit. We're still figuring out what we are, but it started out as very guest-oriented, somewhat of an interviewee with the guest, a couple little funny segments, and then like some positive talking and things. The show has now turned madly into just some really fucking shit-talking and just funny, stupid segments, and we're having a great time with it. And we've actually gained a lot of new listeners, a lot of new followers. People are fucking really digging it, but like with the band, we do have people hitting us up like, yo, what happened to all the good vibes? What happened to the good vibes? You guys are just fucking making fun of everyone now. And we're like, sorry, we're having fun. We're still figuring out what we are, what this show is. We're just growing. We're having fun with it. And we realize what we have fun doing is talking shit. And we've on our Patreon page, bro, anyone listening, and I know this, I'm going to do a quick little ad, but if you do listen to Feeling Good with Duddy or you don't, we also have a Patreon page. That shit has gotten so funny, man. It's pretty much just us punishing our Patreon members. Every week we punish them. We've made this page called the Feeling Good with Duddy Bunker. It's on Facebook. And what we do is we monitor what they do on there and we have all these rules. And if they do dumb shit, we have a character called the Mutilator. And he comes in and he mutes people for like certain, like you get muted for 24 hours. This guy's muted for 72 hours. And then we encourage everyone else to like make fun of those people while they're muted so they can't back themselves up. And like, it's so great. So it's just, it's pretty much, we've created this community where we all just make fun of each other and talk shit. And it's a lot of fun, man.
I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah. But we're having a great time with the podcast, but yeah.
No, dude, I think it's all about evolving and like you said, just having fun with it. Be yourself. I think that comes out, especially on a podcast, like people can tell.
Dude, totally. Yeah. And just like, you know, you said, it's like we're still 83 episodes. It's like, that seems like a lot, but like, it's not, you know, like we're still figuring out what the hell we're doing. I'll still listen to an episode back and be like, ugh. The podcast is a lot like music. If you're not really enjoying it and you don't love it and you don't have a passion for it, it's not going to work.
No.
You know, it's just not. Doing a podcast and being consistent, it's a lot of work. And, you know, you don't think about like we do two a week. We do one for the public. We do one for our Patreon every week. Creating two full shows every single week, creating content for two shows, new material every fucking week. You know, people don't think about that. It's like we put in a lot of time into it, you know?
It's a lot of
work. Well, we have a lot of time now. Yeah. Unfortunately, we have all the time in the world. So
speaking of that, you know, how has home life been? What have you been doing?
How's the family?
How's the fam? Yeah.
Dude, I got to be honest. Yes, you know, I'm super bummed about the way things are going in the music industry. And I have like a fucking hole in my heart for touring because I miss it so bad for sure. But I can't lie that I haven't been enjoying this year somewhat. I've never got to spend so much consistent time with my family. There's always something in my head like, cool, but I only have 5 or 6 days and then I got to go do this. I got to travel for a month that's not in my head right now. So it's like a weird thought of like, holy shit. Like honestly, even still, there's some days where I'm just like standing in my living room looking around like, what do I do?
Yeah.
I
think
I'll just go for I'll take my dog for another walk. Yeah, but it's been great, and it's given me time to put my brain like to some other things, like really working a lot on this podcast. The Roman Duddy thing, I mean, honestly, we wouldn't have as much done as we have right now for our project if we were still fully touring and Dirty Heads were just cranking along, because no matter what happens, Dirty Heads will always be my number one. Sublime with Rome will always be his number one. This is a fun side project because we're buddies, we get along great, and we wanted to make some music. But I mean, for us, for me and Rome to have put together a, you know, 14 song album and put out cover songs and do all the planned tours and all this shit, that would have taken us years if the Dirty Heads were still on a full fucking cycle. We got to knock it out in a couple months, you know? So that was cool. I'm really excited about that. So just trying to take the positives, man. Love spending all the time with the family. Love that I've had time to put my efforts into other things besides the Dirty Heads. And, but definitely really, really missing touring and just seeing everyone out there, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah, touring and all the things that come along with that, of course. But yeah, I think you just got to see the silver linings on this year and take the wins where you can, man. Even the small ones. Like, yep. Every day. Like, if we do a podcast, I'm like, fuck yes.
We did it.
Fuck yeah.
We did an episode.
Yep.
You know? And it feels good, man. It's nice.
Yep.
And the family time is so
what
important.
About you guys? How long have you been doing this podcast?
We started in, I guess, recording in August and then released September 1st. 3 months?
Sweet.
Yeah. We're sitting at 16 episodes, something like that?
Yeah, we're at 16. Nice.
They say most podcasts quit before episode 25.
All right.
Oof. They say if you can get past episode 25, you're way more likely to keep going. But that's what they said. They said most people get going, and before they can even get 25, they're like, ah, fuck, this is too much.
All right, dude. So me and Chris have like our favorite venues and not so favorite venues. What are some of your top three favorite venues and your top three not so favorite?
Well, I think this is probably on most people's tops, especially like in our scene in this country.
Let me guess, you know, Red Rocks.
Red Rocks. I mean, it's really hard to beat that venue. And not only is the show there always amazing and absolutely beautiful, and the crowds are always insane. And you know, the people that go to those Red Rock shows, like, they love it. They're there early partying down. They all get up early. They're there for it's packed for the first band. You know,
it's an experience.
It's amazing.
Dude, yeah.
It's an experience. But not only that is the backstage, they do it so right. Like, the dressing rooms are beautiful and spacious. The catering is always just fucking on point. And everyone that works there is just super nice and kind. And we do the same thing after every show. When everyone's out of the venue and it's empty, then the bands, we all just go back out onto the stage and have some drinks, smoke a couple joints, and just look at the, you know, the beauty that is Red Rocks. And it's just
that's a really good memory for me, is sitting on stage with you guys on that tour. It's like, oh, just drinking, chatting. Like, that was awesome. That's like always a great night.
Yeah. So always really look forward to that. And I always do the same thing every Red Rock show too, is I walk down to the bus afterwards. I take that like dark walk down, because you want to know why? Every fucking time I do it, I see deer.
Yep.
Every time. So I always do that at the end of the night when I got a nice solid buzz on. I'll walk down that pitch black little mountain road to the bus, and just, it's a cool little vibe.
I've never made that walk by choice. I've done it many a time, up and down, but never by choice.
I've done the up one a couple times, not by choice, where it was just like, fuck, like the van's not coming and I just got to get up there. So I've done it. But man, you pay the price for that. You get up the top, you're can't even breathe. But that one's super fun. You know what? Another venue, I only played it one time, and it was maybe a year or two, maybe 2 years ago, and I want to go back so bad. It was in Montana. It was like a brand new venue that just opened, and I can't remember the name, but it was almost like a brewery, but next to it, they had built this big, cool amphitheater. And it was almost like a mini little Red Rocks out here, but it was in the wilderness, and the backdrop to like the crowd is looking at the stage, and behind the stage is just like rapid waters going through like this river and just mountain fucking every, it was like absolutely beautiful. And these dressing rooms that you're, that are in the backstage, you literally had, the dressing rooms had patios that were like overlooking these whitewater rapids, like out in this wilderness. Wow. It was just beautiful, absolutely gorgeous. I wish I could, I wish I remembered the name of it, but that's got to be on one of my top favorites. And just because I've only played it once and I've been dying to get back there. I've been thinking about this venue. God, it's so hard. There's so many amazing ones. Oh, okay. Lake Winnipesaukee.
Yes, in New Hampshire. Oof.
Yes. Oh, okay, that venue is so great. And that's another one where, you know, the view of where you're playing and the crowd and everything is absolutely gorgeous. But again, their backstage area is
they have
like
bicycles, golf carts. Dude,
it's crazy. They have a, and Lake Winnipesaukee, if you don't know, is where they filmed that movie, What About Bob?
Yep.
Which is just the fucking greatest movie ever. But they have, it's really cool. They kind of set the backstage up as like a campground looking thing almost. And, they have a fire pit backstage, and there's a big screen TV by the fire pit that 24/7 plays What About Bob.
Yeah. Dude, I remember we had a day off there one time and after the show. So we just stayed on the grounds and had like such an amazing time, dude.
Yep.
Jumping on rivers and fucking smoking weed. Oh, yeah.
No, that was rad. This is how cool those people are. This is another one where everything backstage is great. The owners and the people who run it are the sweetest, nicest people in the fucking world. So we had a show there, and the next day we had a day off. But they didn't have a show there. They let us just keep our bus there and just party for two straight days. They're like, yeah, go ahead. We don't even have a show. Go ahead. It's yours. Yeah, left the dressing rooms open so people could shower and shit.
That's
like, super cool.
Yeah.
So those are the top three, I guess I would say, off the top of my head. Bottom three. Wow. All right. This is where it gets dark. Wow. Okay. So I will say this only because I had an experience there, and this was the Altar Bar
in Pittsburgh.
And I will tell you this, and this is one of my pet fucking peeves, dudes. Venues that have dressing rooms with no bathrooms, and you are supposed to then go use the public bathroom. So what's happening is I gotta go. It's like I'm on the bus, and it's like we got like 20 minutes before it's time to go on. I don't even think, this might not even have been bus. This might have been van. I don't know. We got like 20 minutes to go on, and all of a sudden I'm like, ooh.
Oh, no.
I gotta take a shit. And not like a, I gotta take a shit. Like, oh no, this is bad. I gotta go now. And I'm looking, and there's not even like a back entrance really to this place. If I don't remember, it's like a, whatever it was, I was gonna have to walk right through the middle of the entire fucking crowd to get to the bathroom, where then there was a line out the door to even get into the bathroom, which had like two stalls. So then I'm just gonna go and fucking have a full blowout in front of all the fans, right? So I'm like, I can't fucking do this, dude. I don't know what to do. I'm panicking. And across the street, there's a little, I'll never forget the look on this dude's face. There's a little tiny Chinese restaurant, and there's a humongous sign on the door that says bathrooms for Patreons only, right? Because obviously there's all these people from the show outside, and he probably gets drunk people all the time coming in there. I'm gonna use your bathroom, you know? And he's like, fucking no. It's this little Asian dude. And I roll in, and I got look of panic on my face. And I look at him, and he doesn't speak really good English, right? And I hand him $5. I go, can I use your bathroom? And he's like, huh? And he's like pointing at the sign. He's like, Patreons only, Patreons only. I'm like, can I use your bathroom? Here's $5. And he's looking at me. He doesn't even, he could see in my eyes. He doesn't even take the $5. He goes, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Like, he can tell, like, it's either yes or I'm shitting on your floor. Like, so I go in there, dude. I fucking unloaded on this. It was so bad, man. And I walked out of there, though, bro. You know those ones, though, where you did it. That might have been the best show I ever played in my fucking life, dude. I felt so free. I was like, oh my God, I did it. I made it. Oh my God. But dude, I'll never forget that place. And I always have a bad taste in my mouth for it. This is why you must have bathrooms in your backstage rooms. Toad's Place. Let me tell you a story about Toad's Place. Same situation. And I think this was like a fly date, or I don't know. Maybe the bus was outside. That wouldn't matter. You can't shit in the bus. Whatever. But we're downstairs. We've got... This is the best. So, because it's... The band that was before us just ended, and we're going on next. So what happens when the band ends? Everyone goes to the bathroom. Well, then poor Mr. Jared Watson's like, oh my God, I have to shit right now. What am I going to do? And Jared's fucking 6'10", so you don't miss the guy. You're just like, there's Jared. So, and at Toad's Place, what it is there's a security guard. The bathroom, the public bathroom is downstairs right next to where the green room is, right?
Yes.
So there's a security guard that stands outside the green room so that these people coming down to go in the bathroom don't go into the green room, right? There's a huge line to the bathroom. And Jared tells the security guard, dude, I got to take a shit. You got to like walk me through the front of this line and get me in there. Dude, so you know the band. We're like peeking out the door, watching it happen. Just like, no, oh my God, here we go. Just gonna fucking do it. So he goes, and of course he's in line. The security guard's pushing everyone to the side with Jared, walking Jared into the bathroom, and everyone's going, dude, it's Jared, this guy in the band. There he goes, going to the bathroom, guy in the band. So we're fucking crying in the dressing room. We're dying, right? So Jared goes in there, and he goes in the stall, and he fucking closes it, and 10 seconds later, all we can hear, the loudest voice I've ever heard in my life. Hey, Dirty J's in here taking a shit. We were all lying on the floor in our green room crying, rolling around like little fucking babies, dude. It was... Oh, God.
That's so fucking good, dude. Oh, my God.
Okay, here we go. This isn't even a venue. This is the Seafood Fest in like fucking... Oh, what is it? It's Cocoa Beach, Florida Seafood Fest.
Yes.
Holy fucking another dimension.
Dude.
What is this place? Okay, this is another one.
I remember doing this gig with you guys.
This is a huge festival. A humongous festival. Seafood Fest, though. These people are not really there for the bands. Maybe there was. They're there for the seafood. But this big festival, right? And here we go, guys. Guess what? No bathrooms backstage. We have a tent. They gave us a white tent. That's it. And this is the best part. This is my favorite fucking part. There is one security guard standing outside our tent. She is 85 years old. Sweetest lady, yes, 85 sweetest years lady. Old. She's standing outside our tent. And inside of our tent, they have not only given us no bathroom, but there's three chairs. There's six people in our band, and we have crew members. Three fold-out chairs in a tent, and that's it, right? Next thing we know, as we're all around there, these three, like, middle-aged ladies come in our tent, and they just sit down in the chairs. And the 85-year-old lady comes over and goes, hey, this is my daughter and some of her friends. They're really big fans. I told them they could hang out in the tent and watch you guys. And what do you say to an 85-year-old lady? We were just like, okay.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Okay, Margaret.
And then that's when I was like, okay, well, where's the bathroom at? And she points to the porta potties that are in the middle of the crowd. Fuck off, C-Fest.
Not only that, but I remember the hotel we were staying at. There was just like, first of all, it was like Cocoa Beach. There's just like not a nice hotel out
no,
there.
No, there's not. It's a different planet.
And then... Dude, there's just like a DJ going on from like 2 a.m. till 6 a.m. And I just remember me and you were like, bro, we just want to fucking sleep.
I just want to go to sleep. I remember this. And they were like, picture the shittiest hotel you've ever seen. And then that shitty hotel has a really, really shitty pool area. Dude, there was people laying out around this pool like it was spring break in fucking Miami or something. Like, it was like, dude, what are you fucking guys doing, dude?
And you can just hear everyone's conversations over the DJ and
it was wild. It was wild. Oh, and that was one of those ones where remember we tried to go into the bar at the hotel to buy drinks, but they're like, oh no. You have to go outside to that guy at the table and you have to buy drink tickets from him. And then you can come in here and give us drink tickets for the drinks. And I was like, dude, I just want to give you cash for a beer. Can I have...
Like, cut the middle,
yeah,
man.
What
like,
is I'm that? Tired. This is not a nightclub, dude. This is a fucking...
That whole thing was, like, bizarre, dude. Yeah. I remember that whole experience now. Wow. I have another cool memory, though. Like, when we played, I think it was, like, Whammy Theater in Seattle. And I think it was, like, before soundcheck or after soundcheck, we got to go to, like, the soccer field. I think it's, like, MetLife or Lumen Field. I don't know what it's called now, but... And just like kick the ball for a while and smoke a couple joints.
Totally.
Dude.
Those are always the best when your show or your concert brings you to these. Sometimes you just show up and you're like, we get to just fucking hang out here all day? This is great. You know, like sometimes you get super stoked.
Shout out to Whammy Theater too. That's another really cool venue I haven't mentioned in this podcast. Really great bus parking, easy loading, great for skating.
Yeah.
Great stage. All totally. Around.
And that's being solid. Said, yeah, man, there's so many venues out there. I wish I could think of them off the top of my head that are just so freaking amazing. A lot of them do it really, really, really right. And a lot of them don't. That's the reality of touring.
Yes. Yeah. Some days you play at Five Point Amphitheater and other days you play at...
Ace of Spades.
Ace of Spades. Yeah. Ace of Spades is a tough one. Is that Seattle? Where is that?
No, that's SAC.
SAC. That's a tough one, too. What's the one in...
Ugh.
I want to say it was Washington or something. It's another rough, like, super punk rocky bar. It's like under...
El Corazon.
Yes. Ooh, that's a rough guy, too. That's a
Have
rough
you
guy.
Been there, Chris?
Which one?
El Corazon.
I don't think so.
It's like a mix of... Okay, a mix of Ace of Spades with, like, 7th Street Entry.
Okay, yeah.
Too.
I may have
super
been
punk
there.
Rock.
Super like, punk rock.
That was,
sweat
that was on my
club.
First tour.
Yeah. That one.
And I kept going to it for a while, but yeah, I think it's
just,
been a
just
while.
Just saying it again, though, 7th Street will always be amazing because the crew's awesome. The green rooms have a bathroom in them, and it's my
it's
hometown.
The little
so.
Things,
baby.
It's the little things, Prince. Dude. Oh, and here's another thing with venues. This is the thing that always kills me. And you'll go to the same venue for 10 fucking years, and they won't fix it. They'll have the one bathroom backstage, no lock. No lock.
Or like just like one of those little hooks.
You're just like, duh. How you know how easy and cheap it is to install a lock on a door? Even just one of those little slide ones. Whoop, just a little slide
Not
guide.
Even 10 minutes.
Bro,
Not
we're
even
talking $2.30 and you haven't fixed it in 10 years. How dare you?
Yeah.
Shame.
Shame. Shame. You should be shot.
Oh, dude, I love it, man.
Holy shit.
Dude.
Let's wrap. This has been so much fun, Duddy. This
Thank
has been
you guys,
awesome.
Man. This
know,
was great.
Man.
It was fucking really good seeing you again, Carlos. I've talked to you recently. But yeah, Carlos, it's been a long time, man. Great to see you.
I know, dude. For real, man. It's been a while.
Hell yeah, man.
Well, hopefully we get to do this fucking festival in March in Florida. I think we're playing the same day.
Oh, nice. Hopefully that doesn't get shut down. See, that's where I'm just tripping on because I just don't see them. I feel like festivals are going to be the absolute last thing.
100%. And who's going to be confident enough to go, like where they can actually get capacity and sell enough tickets? Because I don't want to be shoulder to shoulder.
Well, that's the thing, too, is that's like, how are you going to have people social distancing at a festival? That's
that you already sold tickets
that
for.
You already sold out tickets for. So it's like, how are you planning on doing that in March? I just don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I want it to. Yeah. I hope more than anything I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But I don't think I am. Oh, man. Right on, guys. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you, man.
Well, Duddy, so good to catch up, man. Thanks for coming on and telling all these amazing stories and helping me relive some of them, too.
Right on, man.
It's been amazing.
Hell yeah.
Haven't stopped smiling the whole time.
Oh, good.
And fucking stay healthy. Say hi to the fam. Big love.
Yeah, man. You guys, too.
Chris, any last words?
Check out Feeling Good with Duddy. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah.
And Cutlass.
I'll back it up, man. These Cutlass shirts are awesome. They're comfy, good designs, and durable. Like, I'm still rocking a couple of
Hell
those shirts that you gave me like 3-4 years
nice,
ago.
Nice, man.
Shit.
I'm glad to hear.
The one with the toucan on the pocket?
Oh, yeah. The Love toucan. Yeah, dude. That was a bit ago.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
Right on, dudes. Great talking, man.
Talk soon, brother.
Yeah. Later, Duddy.
Peace.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram at StageRightPodcast. Thank you.